The Guardian.
Day 15, another shocker in Euro 2008. We expected sweet music in Basel. We got Holland Dozier Holland. The Dutch exposed behind by Arshavin. Next up, Italy-Spain. Sid's on the line to preview the match. Will the Spanish vanish or will they banish their 88-year hex? There's Pose and Barney and a friend too. That's all in today's Football Daily. Hello everybody, a very special Saturday it's been in Vienna. Lovely sunny day, lots of chums. Barney brought a friend, here he is beside me, Jovan Selvanathan.
Yep, that's right.
From ESPN.
That's right.
You've been in town doing a special show.
For the last 3 weeks, yeah, we've been just basically covering the whole tournament for Asia, the whole Asia audience, the Sports Center and stuff.
What do you think of it?
Oh, it's been fantastic. It's been a really good tournament because most of the England fans aren't here, actually. So that's mainly it. It's been safe like that.
Yeah, that came up on the post, actually. There were people saying, well, yeah, why are you saying just because England aren't there, it would be even better if England were there? But
it's a wider perspective. You've got to look at the whole thing. But no, it's been really good. And I think that the matches, especially from the neutrals' point of view, from the fans' point of view, have been fantastic. They've had a bit of everything. And, you know, like tonight, as I said, and last night, having the favourites knocked out, it's a good Euro.
It certainly is.
That's the main point.
Barney?
Hello.
You've got the question of the day so far, haven't you, Barney Roney?
It's a question that you yourself posed a few minutes before we came on air, that it's very common in Russia for people to be named after the occupation of their ancestors.
Yes.
Baker, butcher.
Right.
And we were just wondering what poor, terrible thing had happened to Arshavin's unfortunate predecessors. But I don't know, James. I really don't know what the answer
to
that.
Well, we can look into that. And you, Barry?
Yes, hello.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's good of you to get around to me. We get some new people in and suddenly Barry's completely forgotten. Cass, an afterthought, my introduction is, you know, a double take. And me, after being so good to your young boy at the fun fair today.
Yeah, just so we put a lid on the fun fair stuff early. We went to the fun fair. Barry, you were so sweet with young Tiago.
Of course I was. Well, you're too short to get on any of the rides, so I had to go on them with him. And we had a lot of fun. Not officially sanctioned UEFA fun, because the fun fair is not in an officially designated fun area. But yeah, a lot of fun was had. Your son is a gentleman, I have to say.
That's very sweet.
I don't know, he must get it from his mother.
Indeed. Now, Barney, you've been to a press conference involving Italy. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on, because right now the big story is the team of the tournament, Holland, put out on their backsides by those mighty Russians. Let's speak to the man who only yesterday was saying that he'd never look forward to a game as much as he was looking forward to this one, Jonathan Wilson, there in Basel. Jonathan, are you there?
Yes, I am here, James.
My word, what an extraordinary match that proved to be.
Oh, it was absolutely fantastic, wasn't it? I mean, that really is, I think, probably the greatest team performance I've ever seen. And what was amazing about it was the influence that Arshavin had. I really can't remember, back in the 80s, but one player having such a major influence, such a decisive influence over a game. I thought Arshavin was absolutely sensational tonight.
Absolutely, and his value skyrocketing even as we speak. It was extraordinary how Holland just failed to turn up, and it's interesting when you combine that with the performances of Portugal and of Croatia, the other teams who had rested 8 or 9 players in their third group match, and the way that the players who were presumably rested just seemed to have dead legs in this crucial quarterfinal.
I did think that about Portugal in the first half hour against Germany. They were very slow to get going, and Croatia last night didn't show further. And, I mean, I don't know if that was the case with Holland tonight or whether it was just that Russia were that good. And possibly people were overrating how well the Dutch had played. They clearly were slightly fortunate in terms of the margins of victories in the first two games. This idea that they kind of some reincarnation of Rams Michels' side, I think, was always nonsensical. Like, they play with what they challenged to call a broken team. With the two holding midfielders very deep, they're certainly not an attacking team. They're very much a counter-attacking team, and they're very, very good at that. I don't mean to kind of diminish those performances, but when they come against a team like Russia, who hold possession as they did, they really struggle to come back at that. And it was almost like, I remember reading in Norman Mailer's book, The Fight, about the Ali Thorman fight. But what knocks a team out isn't one big punch; it's a series of well-timed, flurry of punches, a combination. And that's what Russia were producing tonight.
Barry and I know exactly what you mean. We've played Wii Boxing, so...
Yes. Jonathan, Russia seemed to be a lot fitter than Holland tonight, and... In the last World Cup, South Korea, admittedly, they progressed with the help of a lot of dodgy refereeing decisions, but they seem to be a lot fitter than teams they came up against. Is this a feature of hitting teams in general, that he works them harder and has them running up mountains and hills?
I think that's probably starting the case, yeah. I mean, certainly in South Korea, that was true. But also, you've got to remember, Russia are in the middle of their season, whereas the Dutch players are coming up the end of a long, hard season. So I think you expect Russia to be... Yeah, getting some credit, but it's also actually timing working in Russia's favour, which, given it always works against them in European club competition, possibly we shouldn't begrudge them.
Hi, Jonathan, it's Barney Ronay here. I don't know if you... I mean, talking about Russia being incredibly fit, it's worth noting they have the youngest average age of any team in this tournament, and that they have one player with 50 caps, who was C-Mac, who got his 50th cap this evening. This is an incredibly young team, which just sort of adds to Hiddink's achievements.
Yeah, absolutely. And the strange thing with C-Mac is that he was out of the side for about 2 years, and then called back in about a month ago and was given the captaincy immediately. He played in the 2002 World Cup, but it's really only since he went to Rubin Kazan, who are top of the Russian League at the moment. He's had a fantastic start to the season there, and is really dominating things for them. It's a slightly surprising call-up from Hiddink, but I mean, he's more than justified his place. I think he does a very good job just at the back of the midfield there, very calm presence. He is, I think, probably the oldest player in the team. I haven't actually checked that, but he's certainly older than most of them. He clearly has that experience, and he's very well respected.
Well, there you go. Extraordinary. So through they go to a semi-final with either the Spanish or the Italians. And they just look so impressive. Barry, Germany-Russia final. You predicted it.
I certainly did. Mm. Aren't I great?
Aren't you great? Jonathan, there you go. And there's yet more to come from them, I imagine, yes?
I hope so. I mean... Yeah, you wondered whether that Sweden performance was going to be the great performance from them, and you always had that slight doubt because obviously Sweden, they're kind of dull and muscular and everything else. But this was against a genuinely good side tonight. If they play like that against the Dutch, then you wonder kind of how many performances like that team could have in. Do they really have four? Do they have two more? Can they go on to win it? But if they can produce that kind of performance against whether it's Spain or Italy, then there's absolutely no reason why they can't go all the way.
Yeah, indeed. In the meantime, they've got their revenge for 1988 and Van Basten, eh? Jonathan, thanks a lot. Look forward to hearing more from you along the line in this tournament.
Yeah, the only question I would raise, just to kind of cast a slight negative on it, is they are still pretty poor in the air at the back, and every time a Dutch had a free kick wide, they caused problems. So you think maybe Luca Toni, maybe Fernando Torres could prosper there. So that would be my kind of, the one kind of doubt that lingers from tonight.
Cool. Interesting. Very, very interesting indeed. Thanks then, Jonathan.
Well, no problem.
Have a lovely evening.
Thank you. Bye.
Jonathan Wilson there from the moon. Barney, you want to talk a little bit more about the Dutch and what went wrong? Hey.
Well, I just thought it was a bit of a surprise by the end of the game that we hadn't seen either Huntelaar or Robben. Robben having had a great impact as a substitute, and Huntelaar on 5 goals in 5 games for Holland in his last really nice little run. And also sparing a thought for Clarence Seedorf, who seemed like the kind of player they could have really done with in the late stages of a tournament. He's not here and has a huge experience, which is possibly what they were lacking.
I don't know. I mean, until tonight, we were all saying how brilliant it was that Van Basten had cut ties with the past and all the old infighting and stuff. I would agree, though, that it appears the substitutions didn't work out particularly well for him. And given also that he's trying to convince Huntelaar to stay on at Ajax, and Huntelaar's saying, well, I don't think I will, mate, because you never play me when you are my manager with the Dutch national team, that doesn't look like it's going to go well for him. But it was bizarre. Anybody have any opinions on why Holland, apart from the fact that they rested their first-choice team in the third game in the group, why did they not turn up tonight?
Well, I personally think, I sort of alluded to it while Johnson was on the phone, I just don't think they were as fit as Russia. Mm. Russia absolutely murdered them in extra time, like took the game, killed them, won by 2 and won comfortably. And Holland, their legs were dead, even though the players were rested, and I think vastly superior fitness on the part of the Russians was what won it for them.
That's a very good point. I think Barry has hit on it in that Holland have done a lot in their first group games, but you know, as we've seen with good tournaments, when you've got 9 goals scored, 1 conceded, it doesn't mean anything. I saw the Russians play Sweden in Innsbruck, and Gus Hiddink came out before that match and he said, "We've got to win this from the first minute." They completely out-hustled and out-pressured the Swedes, and that's exactly pretty much what they did today. Mm-hmm. And they did right till the last minute as well.
That hitting, Jakob posting in saying, given his repeated success with unfancied national teams, do you think it's safe to call Hiddink the goose that lays the golden eggs? Fantastic, eh? Marvellous. Well, there you go. Barney, is that enough on Holland?
I've got a thing to add on Holland.
Oh, go on then.
No, nothing.
Oh, you
else,
haven't
no.
got anything to add on Holland. Well, there you go. And off they go home, and Russia go through and to the semi-final with either Spain or Italy. And Barry, as we mentioned, you're already, well, you have been for the last month saying that they're going to meet Germany in the final.
I have indeed, yes. And I'm actually quite...
How did you know that? Because none of us... How, Barry?
It's a dream.
I'll tell you exactly
why. Is it a kind
why.
Of Rain Man incident, you know, like with the matches and how many there were? How did you know, Barry?
It's the hitting factor.
Really?
I think, yeah, I was so impressed with... I know South Korea, and pardon me if I'm repeating myself, but I know South Korea kind of cheated their way to the semi-finals of the World Cup in Japan and South Korea. But I just thought they were so swashbuckling, so fit. And I thought if hitting can work the same magic on the Russia team, then they will be a force to be reckoned with. In their, I think it was their first game, I wasn't particularly impressed with what I saw, but ever since they've been magnificent, and I certainly wouldn't bet against them to get to the, and if they do get to the final, I predicted a Germany win. I really do hope Russia win it.
Well, based on tonight, you'd quite fancy them, wouldn't you, Barney?
Jonathan has already gushed about Arshavin. I'd just like to say, I mean, he's the difference. They're a totally different team with him against Spain. He wasn't there. They had no focus at all. And he's the best player. He's the player of the tournament after 2 games. He's been absolutely fantastic.
Well, indeed. Well, indeed. Post, sniffy one here from France. In my cave in Paris says, please big up producer Pete on my behalf for doing a great job under very difficult circumstances. If only you knew in my cave. Oh, he says, believe me, I do know. Okay, and yes, Jonathan Wilson is brilliant, which I think we all agree with. Brotherhood of Football on the subject of Baron DNL in Vienna. Says he went to Otterkring last night, the area in Vienna that is predominantly Turkish on one side and Croatian on the other. The atmosphere was amazing. No trouble at any of the hot spots I have been. That is no trouble on the Turkish side. I think only about 12 people got arrested throughout the night, which is nothing. And it's true, because there were, 200,000 fans here of those two, you know, the fairly fiery ethnic groupings. And
well, when we left here last night, I wandered off down. I met a colleague at an Irish bar down the road, but all the Croatian fans were sort of sitting around on the chairs outside closed bars, but they were just sitting there. I think they were ready to sit there for the night and wait for their trains or home or whatever, but yeah, there was absolutely no hassle whatsoever.
Excellent. One more post here. Andy G1966, which is probably some kind of letter code for something horrible. But anyway, things you shouldn't do at work. Number one, if employed as an analyst at a club's own TV station like Real Madrid's and asked to put together your team of the season, don't offend your employers by having no Real Madrid players in the team, even though they won the league with ease. Is it Barca TV for you next year, Sid? Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Sid. What's this? So you didn't have any Real Madrid players in your team of the season?
I'm really glad, actually, that this has been picked up on, because on occasion this year I've been accused of obviously being pro-Real Madrid because I've been on Real Madrid TV, and I've always claimed that no matter which channel I'm on, I'll always tell the truth. And as far as I was concerned, Real Madrid this year probably didn't deserve to have any players in the starting 11 of a best team, except for two, and I didn't do Iker Casillas and Wesley Sneijder, but to completely undo all my good work now is when I was on that particular programme at Real Madrid TV, they asked me for my best team, not including Real Madrid players.
Ah, okay. All right, well, that's fair enough then. Listen, the main reason that we wanted to speak to you tonight is, of course, Sunday's big quarter-final between Spain and Italy. Now, the Spanish are a bit superstitious, yes?
A little bit, yes. Here we are.
All right, so they're worried about, first off, the fact that it's 88 years since they've beaten Italy, and second, this extraordinary June the 22nd curse, yes?
Yeah, and I must say now, I've got to hold my hands up, actually. I said the other day in the blog that I wrote for GU that they... gone out on the 22nd of June for free tournaments running. That's not true. It's free tournaments. 86, let me try and get this right, 86 I believe.
I believe I'm going to double check it now. It's World Cup 86, Euro 96, and World Cup 2002.
Okie dokie, well, to 2003. And yeah, that is something they picked up on. But to be honest with you, I don't think it's something they're majorly hung up on. I just think it's kind of a statistical quirk they're pointing out. Now, obviously, statistical quirk that only really means one thing, and that is that Spain almost always go out of the quarterfinal stage.
Indeed so. And also, they must be worried about the fact that so far in this tournament, the team that's performed better of the two teams facing one another, the team that had the better record in the group stages has gone flying out. Does that concern them?
Well, I think it's something that they have talked about, in so much as they look, we are playing very, very well, but look at the teams that have been really impressive, Portugal and Holland tonight, although obviously I haven't really had time to respond to Holland tonight, and that is something that worries them, because what it does is it's more proof that from a Spanish perspective, that the team that plays football, and again, from a Spanish perspective, the team that plays football doesn't necessarily win.
Right.
Now, the Spanish believe that in footballistic terms, if there is such a phrase, that they are the best side in the tournament, but that they recognise that, think that other things play a part. But actually, there was a very interesting moment tonight during the commentary of the Russia game, where the commentator said, well, if Russia going through, and he said, oh, hang on, I probably shouldn't say Russia going through. If Russia don't concede another goal, they're going through to play Spain in the semi-finals. And I was thinking, well, hang on, if Russia don't concede another goal and if Spain don't get beaten by Italy tomorrow...
Right, that's a fairly good point you make there. Still, 8 goals in the 3 games that they've had and 3 wins. They're now 20 games unbeaten, including beating Italy in that friendly back in the spring. Is anything going to go wrong? Are they going to implode this time?
Well, the thing is about the friendly in spring, you know, is that there's a phrase in Spain which they use all the time, which is, we are champions of the world of friendly matches. And they're very clear in the fact that they know they've beaten good teams in friendlies, but that when it comes to tournaments, they just don't beat the good teams. They tend to get through the group okay, and then when it comes to knocking against the good teams, they do tend to go out in the first game. For what it's worth, I think Spain are different this time, and I think they're different for a number of reasons. The first one, I think, is they've genuinely got talent that they've probably not had in previous tournaments. So they've always had good sides, but I don't think they've had a side as good as this. The other thing is, I've seen in this tournament anyway, is that I think they're scoring goals in different ways. And then the Spanish talk all the time about what's come to be known as tiki-taka, which is kind of a nonsensical phrase, which more or less means pass and move. And they're very obsessed with this short possession game. But actually, you look at their goals, and they're scoring them in other ways. And I do think that Spain now are able to mix it up in a way that perhaps they weren't able to in the past. Now, of course, we've reached a stage now where it's a quarter-final, it's a one-off, and Italy could beat them. But I do think that Spain have more to their game now than they've had in previous seasons.
Mm. All right, nice one. But anyway, a mood of nervous apprehension, I presume, on Saturday night across the Spain.
Yeah, of course, because there is the belief that Spain are a very good side, but there's always been that belief, and there is the belief that, hang on a minute, here comes the big team, and the big team that always knocks us out. And it's not just a big team, obviously, on this occasion. It's Spain's bogey team. If there is a side that they really hate, in the world of football is Italy, because they believe that the Italians have perhaps the things that they lack. You know, they may not have the skill of the Spanish, but they have that. But what Luis Aragonés always describes as the ability to know how to compete, the ability to play what the Spanish sometimes describe as other football, as a grind out results when you're not a good side. The other thing they're very conscious of is that Italy playing badly in the first couple of games, although actually I disagree with them, I thought they were quite good against Holland despite losing, but they think that Italy always do this. They play badly and bit by bit they crank it up, whereas Spain tend to go in the other direction. They start okay and bit by bit seem to fall away.
Interesting, very interesting. See, that's fantastic. We look forward to speaking to you after the game, hopefully.
I hope so, cheers.
Well, that's the lowdown in a very real sense from Spain. Barney, you're fresh from an Italy press conference where Roberto Donadoni was presumably in a mood of nervous apprehension himself.
He was slightly nervous. I mean, we know that Spain don't really want to play Italy, but I kind of got a sense that Donadoni slightly worried about the pace of the Spanish attack
slightly
against his makeshift defence, where Christian Panucci is 35 years old, playing his fourth game in however many 10 days, alongside Chiellini, and it's certainly not the defence he would have picked as his first choice.
Well, no, you were making the point, it's a makeshift defence, but the real problem as well for them is that, A, having lost Cannavaro, former World Player of the Year, the guy who basically was, I think, man of the tournament in the World Cup 2006, he went out on the first day of training in Austria. They've now lost Barzagli, which means they've only got two reserves left. Gamberini, who's way too inexperienced, and who's the other fellow? Oh, Materazzi, who was awful in their opening game. So they've only got two reserves for their back four, and two of their back four are only a yellow card away from suspension. So the whole thing's disastrous.
James, this Chiellini dude, Chiellini, hasn't struck me as being a wonderful player. Would it not be sort of fair to put Materazzi's shocker in the opening game down as a bad day in the office and bring him in? Like, he's not a bad player.
No, he's not a bad player, but he hasn't been in the best of form for Inter either. In fact, I think I'm right in saying that he spent a fair amount of time out with injury, although I do get confused by this time of the evening. However, yeah, that may well be what happens. But I think Chiellini's not had a bad tournament so far, actually. Myself. But anyway, that is a problem. And Barney, as you were pointing out, the big finger is being pointed at Donadoni for not having brought enough defenders.
Well, what he said in the press conference was the reason he didn't pick another defender is because Panucci and Chiellini are so versatile. But, I mean, that's really being pushed to the absolute limit now.
Right. Well, the other thing about the Italians, did you talk about Luca Toni and the not scoring business?
No, he didn't. Spain were keen to talk about Luca Toni. I mean, Puyol described him as having lots of goals in his legs.
Yes.
But unfortunately, they're still in his legs at the moment. But he said he wasn't looking forward to playing him.
Right.
I mean, given that Toni seems to have spent most of the tournament in a mid-air kung fu kick, desperately trying to control the ball.
No, he's controlled the ball well when he brings it, when there's mid-air kung fu. Oh, sorry, I'm going off my Italy rant again. But, yeah.
Well, before shinning it out of play.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. The thing about, well, I mean, Italy have not played badly. They've created a whole bundle of chances in plenty of games. Against Romania, this was very much the case, and then ended up with a 1-1 draw because Luca Toni couldn't put it away. The Italians, the Gazzetta, for the last two or three days have been banging on about one stat, and it is the fact that great Italian strikers traditionally don't get going until the fourth game. Some examples: Roberto Baggio, USA 94, didn't score till the fourth game. Gigi Riva, Mexico 1970, didn't score until the fourth game. Paolo Rossi, Barry?
Mm-hmm. Didn't score till the fourth game.
Exactly right, and ended up top scorer. So, there you go. And Luca Toni, interestingly, World Cup 2006, didn't score until the... Well, I mean, I could go on. But anyway, these things do...
Well, at the risk of bringing family disputes into this, I remember having an argument with my dad years ago. I can't remember the strike. It was some Uruguayan or Chilean striker. But my dad reckoned he was a great striker because he kept getting in scoring positions. And I reckoned he was rubbish because he kept getting in scoring positions and not scoring. Luca Toni, you have to say, he has had a bad tournament.
He's had a bad tournament.
He's made chance after chance after chance after
so
chance.
So far, he's had a bad tournament, but there is no question that he is of calling him a bad striker, because his club record is absolutely astonishing. And in the qualifying matches, he's done well for Italy. But, I mean, this player regularly scores over 20 goals a season.
But do you reckon he just needs one to go in off his arse or whatever, and the floodgates
will
open?
I don't know, because in 2006 he scored one, and it didn't exactly open any floodgates then. But I don't think he's a bad player. But anyway, there you go. So that's what the Italians are banging on about, you know, all this tradition, etc. And they do have to cling on to tradition, because the one tradition that they don't have this time is a decent defence. They are absolutely shocking at the back. Perhaps, and this is another point the Gazzetta have been banging on about, the fact that the Spanish are equally woeful at the back and are a bit tiny. And maybe Luca, you know, who's a big chap, will be able to take some advantage from that. Perhaps that's something the Italians can point to. Jovan, you were nodding sagely.
Oh, yeah.
I do that a lot.
It's just, you know, it's like a carry on. But I think with the Italians, it's especially what you're saying about the fourth game. They're a lot like the Germans. If you think about what the Germans did the other day, a lot of people questioned them through the group stage. They said, is this German side? They turned it on against Portugal. Portugal was a well-marshaled side. People were going to think that they were favourites. And it was a different German side. Hmm. And I think as Italy get closer to the final, they kind of take these games as being more important. And then you'll see... I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a really good Italian side come out tomorrow, even with their frailties at the back, and even with Luca Toni's, Barney said, goals in his legs. You might just see a couple of them coming out tomorrow.
I tell you what, the other thing we haven't mentioned is the fact that Gattuso and Pirlo are going to be missing.
Well, Donadoni made a joke about that and said, well, it may not have been a joke, he said he was going to leave them out anyway, so it's actually not interfered with his plans at all.
Right.
But you get the thing, it's not such a problem for Italy. I mean, it's really the defence. I mean, they have midfielders who can come in. I mean, presumably Camoranesi come in, and possibly Aquilani.
Ambrosini for Gattuso, I think, is the... Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, they do have other options. And I don't think Pirlo really turns it on for... I mean, people are going to shoot me down for this, for Italy, the way that he has done for Milan. But yeah.
Well, I don't think that Spain can beat Italy because I think they're afraid of them. And as I was telling you earlier, I was in a press conference with the Spanish players while Italy were playing Romania, and there was suddenly a terrible roaring, screeching noise coming through the wall, and people worried there was a terrorist attack going on from Tyrol separatists. And a UEFA official had to actually reassure them that's just the Spanish players watching Italy play Romania. And Romania had just been awarded a penalty, and the Spanish players, we then heard the huge groans as Romania missed it. And the sense was even then they really didn't want to play Italy.
Mm. There is that with the Spanish players. I mean, if you look at the stats, after, I mean, they won it in 64, I think it was, at home. Seven times in the World Cup and the European Cup, it's been the quarterfinal stage. So they've got that as well as this kind of the fact that Italy have won the World Cup four times.
You know, their theme song this year is "We'll Go Past Quarterfinals." It genuinely is. That's the title of their theme song. We will go past.
It's been England song. Yeah. Whether it's going to come true. The fact is that, you know, you're facing a team, Italy, who can pull out the worst game and still come away with, you know, they're four-time World Cup winners. There's something, it's what Sid was talking about, that other type of football. They know how to pull out the results. And I think Spain will play the best game that they can. But in the end, if things don't go right for them, it will spin Italy's way. That's what I reckon.
Barry, you're saying a Germany-Russia final. What do you think?
Well, I've said a Germany-Russia final. I'm going to stick with that. But I do think Spain will win tomorrow. The main reason being that I accidentally put a drunken £100 bet on with the original producer Pete that Spain wouldn't get to the final, so they probably will.
Fascinating. It's a kind of a well thought out argument we like to have on this podcast.
It's as good a reason for thinking it as any.
Yeah, well, as has been pointed out, nobody knows anything anyway. Well, so there you go. On that note,
I'd quite like to hear what's the most interesting or amusing thing that's happened to you on your travels so far around Euro 2008 as an ESPN reporter?
As an ESPN Asian reporter that nobody wanted to talk to us in Klagenfurt.
Why not?
I don't know. We just got the sense of the feeling that things haven't changed in 40 years at Klagenfurt. And I don't know. We just kind of got a really odd feeling. I think it was strange.
In Carpathia?
Yeah. It's odd that. It's strange, isn't it? Yeah. It's very odd. We tried to get, you know, all sorts of Vox and stuff like that. We tried to go up to people, but they just kind of spat at us and then left.
Was it seriously not a pleasant atmosphere?
It was not a pleasant atmosphere, I have to say. It was the only one of the host cities where we kind of thought there was something extra going on.
Right. Well, that's very...
That's not a highlight, by the way. It's not the one I'm going to be blogging about, I think, but it was just probably the strangest thing that happened. I think with the entire Euro tournament so far, you know, I'm a big fan of stories. As I said, the first weekend when it came out, there were good results, but predictable results.
Right.
The people that were supposed to win won. Then when Italy lost, you know, that's one of the stories that came up. Then you got Russia's run as well, and you got Turkey's run. That's what really makes it special. I'm really glad that this tournament has had two or three stories that have gone far.
And are the good people of Asia very interested in Euro 2008?
Yeah. Football is just the biggest thing in Asia. And, you know, whether it's the BPL, as we call it, Bonnie was telling me it's still the EPL in England.
It's not the EPL, it's called the Premier League.
It's called the Barclays Premier League out there because Barclays is really trying to put a big foot into Asia. That's great, but yeah, Euro is a global thing. You know, it's like the World Cup, and it's really well followed. So got a lot of reports to send back to people.
Excellent. Well, very good. Thank you very much for joining us, Jovan.
No problem. Thanks for having us. It's been brilliant.
No, the more the merrier. And
not in a room like this.
It is a bit cozy.
Sadly, my two Irish journalist friends didn't make the cut. They're comatose in the room next door.
Yeah, cozy. Well, you only got us halfway through.
They'll be waking up in time for tomorrow's, I'm sure. So we'll perhaps they'll be caring to join us for that, which you'll be able to hear on Monday, after which, of course, we've got those 2 days off. We'll be back tomorrow. Many, many thanks. In the meantime, Jovan.
Thanks.
Barney.
Thank you.
And you, Barry.
You're very welcome.
And good luck pacing all that together, producer Pete. Many, many thanks to you, listener, for doing all the hard work. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.